Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport by myself, Catherine Whittaker, and by David Law. I'm very pleased that I got that introduction out cleanly because it's been a while since we've done one of these podcasts. I almost sort of forgot what I was saying there because David Law has been swanning off on holiday in La Manga, no less. We'll let you off, yeah. David, because it was a tennis-themed holiday.
It was awesome. It was amazing. And I mean, I tell you, it has totally revolutionized my approach to the sport of tennis. Not as a sort of observer, because I'm still as interested as I was before. But in terms of actually playing it, for instance, I'm sitting here talking to you right now in tennis clothes. I don't wear tennis clothes. As anybody who's seen our Instagram and our Twitter, etc., will tell you, I wear suits and ties, and I wear what I consider smart work clothes and things that look relatively okay on a 43-year-old, 6'7" tall person. And I don't really do sport clothes anymore.
It's niche, isn't it, David?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A niche category of clothing.
It's very niche, very niche. But this trip has changed my view that a 43-year-old not only can still play tennis and can actually get a bit better. So I did 5 days of 2 hours a morning tennis with my kids and with my wife. And I tell you, I am ready for that rematch, Catherine Whittaker. I have learnt so much stuff over the last week. I've had drills. I've been working on my backhand. I've been doing volley drills.
Go on then. Tell me what you've learnt then. Tell me what all the improvements are. Tell me.
Well, I'm not going to tell you how. Because
how many miles per hour have they added to your serve?
The bigger point is they've helped
that's
me
a
get
big
it in. I'm getting it in
hesitation.
Now. You don't actually have to duck anymore. So
right.
that means it's more accurate. And I've learned about, keeping your feet active and looking like a tennis player is what they say. Look like a volleyer. Don't look like you're just standing there leaning against a wall. You know, get ready for the shot that's coming towards you.
Basically, they've gone, we can't make this bloke into a tennis player, so let's make him into somebody that looks like a tennis player.
Exactly. Use that height. Make it look like you're really intimidating.
Sounds like they had you pretty well sussed. Are
yes.
Are you losing to either of your kids yet? Because that's always a watershed moment, isn't it?
Well, put it this way, I used to beat my wife.
Oh,
used
good.
To. So that's already stopped.
So whatever improvements you've made have been eclipsed by improvements she's
improvements.
Made.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. They all went on the course as well. So, but no, I mean, look, what's nice is that I don't know about you, but since I've started working in tennis, I've played less tennis, which seems ridiculous, but that is the case. And I think part of it is when we go to tennis tournaments, I don't want tennis players or tennis coaches or anybody we work with to see me in tennis clothes because I feel like a complete idiot.
Yeah, but I don't want them to see you in tennis clothes either, David.
Right. Yeah, well, fair. And the bottom line is I'm no longer shy. I'm ready now. I tell you.
Oh, dear.
I'm a new man.
La Manga, what have you done?
But it's the enthusiasm of the coaches that I like, because they not only do they...
Because David Law loves enthusiasm.
Yeah,
crashing down to earth having to record the podcast with me now.
They put us through 2 hours in the morning of this stuff. And I went back there for my evening meal one night at about 7:30, 8 o'clock. And the same coaches were there having their own doubles match, which they didn't need to be having. They'd been on the courts all day long and they're still there just because they like playing tennis. So,
did you play any family mixed doubles, David?
We did do a bit of that, but I have to say tempers were running high. This morning we had a bit of a hit, and my 5-year-old and my 7-year-old don't take too kindly if you don't let them win. So, yeah.
You let them win.
Well, you've got to, you know.
Right, that's the story, and you're going to stick to it for the next 20 years. Right.
That's right.
Well, that sounds lovely. It's been grey and drizzly in the UK, so I'm very glad to hear how much you enjoyed your Spanish holiday.
I've got
tickets to the Athletics tonight, and we're sitting in the lower bowl of the Olympic Stadium, which is uncovered. And currently it looks like the apocalypse has arrived in London. So I'm going to be doubly grumpy today, because I've been looking forward to that for weeks, and I'm very upset.
Oh, dear.
So there we go. Should we talk about some tennis?
Yeah, I'll tell you, why don't we do that? We're on safer ground there.
So it has been, how long has it been since we, obviously our last episode was the Roger Federer special. Thank you so much for all the responses that we've had to that. I really think it was a very special edition that we were able to bring you of the Tennis Podcast. I think it was David Law at his very best. I do. And if you haven't listened, if you sort of rolled your eyes at a non-normal tennis podcast and thought, no, I want a proper news-based tennis podcast, honestly, give it a go, because it's not the sort of podcast that I would necessarily rush to listen to. I'm not that into sort of interview-based podcasts and that sort of thing. And I think it was one of our very best. So give the Roger Federer special a try. It seems to become even more newsworthy as the weeks go on. He's playing in Montreal for the first time in 6 years. He's been greeted like when the Beatles first went to the States. We'll come on to talk about Montreal and Toronto and all of that in a minute. But first of all, we should probably start with the breaking news in the tennis world, or the news that certainly broke about 24 hours ago, which is that Sara Errani, former top 10 player, former French Open finalist, now outside the world's top 100, I think, has failed a drugs test and has received a 2-month ban from the ITF. Now, that might sound like a very short ban. It certainly did to me when I first read it. There was a lot of confusion, and then we all clamoured to read the official judgment from the ITF, which states that they accepted her defence on the balance of probabilities, which is the level of proof required at these hearings, that more it seemed likely that she had ingested accidentally some of her mother's cancer medication, because she was staying at home with her parents. Her mum kept her cancer medication on a work surface where food was also kept, and they speculated that what must have happened is some cancer medication, which is the same drug as she's tested positive for. It's a drug that promotes the production of lean muscle mass. It's akin to taking testosterone. It blocks estrogen levels in your body, so the effects are similar to those of enhanced levels of testosterone in your body. But they accepted her defense that what likely happened is some cancer medication dropped into some broth.
Just bizarre, isn't it, to think that could have happened. I mean, it sends my mind back to, different type of story, but when Greg Rozetsky was given a ban initially and was able to get it overturned by the fact that he was given medication by ATP trainers who reckon they'd had a contaminated batch of medication. And yeah, I mean, effectively it's ruling out a suspension, or in this case reducing one, by bearing effectively no blame as such in terms of intent.
Well, the thing is, on this balance of probabilities thing, they can't prove that that's what happened. They haven't proved that that's what happened. What they've proven is that that could have happened, that that was a not unlikely scenario. And therefore, on the balance of probabilities, her defence has been accepted and her ban has been reduced. Now, I wasn't at the tribunal. I've read the judgment in full. It all sounds quite bizarre to me, but look, I can't speculate about those details and the fact the tribunal has accepted that defence. I accept that. I will say that it is not a good look. It is not a good look for a Grand Slam finalist player to have tested positive for something, regardless of the potential mitigating circumstances, and to receive only a 2-month ban. When the email landed saying she's received a 2-month ban, everybody went, "What? Why even bother with that? What? Either you've been doping or you haven't. Why bother with a 2-month ban?" Do you see what I'm saying, David?
I do see what you're saying. The same time, if I were to put myself in her shoes, let's say you effectively did nothing wrong and you just... I mean, let's say that is exactly what happened.
To be clear, David, they haven't said we find that you've done nothing wrong. We can't prove that you did something wrong.
I'm saying to you, if you were in her shoes and that is what happened and that you hadn't gone out to take any drugs at all, whether to improve your performance or not, and you had literally got unlucky by... your mother having sort of done a meal where some had dropped into yours. Where do you stand on that? Because I mean that would be
personally.
Terrible,
I stand that every especially given this has happened this week. You know, with all of the Usain Bolt, Justin Gatlin. You know, the whole thing's been in the spotlight. On the athletic side of things, you know, a whole sport has been brought into disrepute this week. You know, there people stand in different places, but the fact is the most talked about thing that's happened at the World Championships, the marquee event at a World Championships of a sport this week, has been the discussion of a 2-times drugs taker, a 2-time doper, winning the marquee event at that sport. And it does threaten to bring a whole sport into disrepute. I think that really shows that there can be no room for complacency. And frankly, for me, I come down on the side of zero tolerance. And I know that that will lead to some innocent or
collateral damage.
To some collateral damage, yeah. I mean, you could make the argument that let's say that was the argument with Sara Errani. I'm afraid you've just got to be more vigilant. You know, you can't be staying with your mum who's got her cancer medication, which is on the banned list in a food preparation area. You have to say, sorry, no, the risk of it falling in the broth is too high. You know, I'm afraid I believe we are too complacent in our sport, and I don't think we can afford any complacency. And I'm afraid maybe that does mean a bit of baby going out with bathwater, but for me, that's what I would prefer. But and that's nothing to do with the specifics of the Sara Errani case. I just don't. I think a 2-month ban. When I say what message does that send out, I'm not being facetious. I genuinely don't know what message that sends out. What message does that send out? It's okay to be a bit negligent, but not. I mean, I'm just left with a feeling of dissatisfied confusion from the whole thing. And I don't think we can afford that. I think to allow ourselves that is a luxury we don't have in sport.
Yeah. I take your point about the sport not being able to afford to be complacent. I do get all that. I think the somebody spiked my drink argument is one of the most frustrating of the lot, because it does just tend to get thrown around. But I always think, if that were me, for instance, and somebody did do that to me and I got banned as a result of it, it would be just such a heartbreaker, really, if you had done nothing wrong to be convicted
of something.
Of course
it would,
but
how much of a heartbreaker is it for all these athletes that are being given their gold, silver and bronze medals 8 years or 6 years after the fact, which is what we're seeing at the World Athletics Championships this year. At the beginning of every session, they have a medal ceremony for those that were denied their medals. I think it's mostly from the Daegu World Championships in 2011. And they've had 6 years of that feeling. And so they're the collateral damage of the current situation. They and many others and many other situations. So, yeah, I don't think that argument holds necessarily, because the net negative, I think, at the moment is higher. I think we're naive if we think there's any room for complacency on this issue. And a lot of what I've said there has nothing to do with the case of Sara Errani. It's just thrown up the general issue of doping again, which is not something we want to be thinking about in sport. And as I say, happening in conjunction with what's been happening in the athletics this week, it does rather put it all under the microscope. This is a clunky and unfair segue, but given that I have Dan Evans and Maria Sharapova for different reasons on my agenda, and given that they have also experienced ITF rulings of their own in recent months, should we move on to discuss those two? Dan Evans, first of all, and I know this is old news, but the Dan Evans story broke during Queens, and during Queens we were producing daily tournament podcasts, and David Law wasn't on them because he was busy being the big man in charge of the whole media operation, and we weren't able to sort of give you your say, David, on the matter. So 2 months later,
got there
over
the
to you.
Well, the other thing I should say is I don't believe anything else has come out in terms of what the ruling is and in terms of what the suspension is going to be, if indeed there is one, and I'm sure there will be one over the last week. I haven't really been across everything.
On Dan Evans, you're talking about. There's been no news in the last week.
No, okay.
So you haven't missed anything.
The fact is, all we know of what he did and what has been said is what he said when he revealed to all of us initially that he had tested positive for cocaine, and there was going to be a case to answer. Now, it's quite simple, really. I mean, he's made an absolutely horrendous decision. I don't exactly know the full details. None of us do at this stage as to when he took it, why he took it, under what circumstances. The fact is, it's in his system. Therefore, he's going to have to take whatever's coming to him, and he deserves it. I feel that my initial reaction was, well, what a shame. And a few people said, well, it's not a shame. He's just stupid. Well, of course he's stupid, but that's why it's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame that he's been that stupid.
He'd finally, after so many years of not knowing how to make it work and use his talent to make a successful career, he'd finally cracked it. He'd finally sorted that out. He'd figured out how to travel, to put the best into his tennis, to get the most out of it. And here he was with a ranking just outside the top 50 in the world. I think the first 6 months of this year, he earned over £300,000. You know, this guy was going to make a couple of million pounds unless he was badly injured over the next couple of years. So he had sorted it. He had developed a game that could compete with many of the world's best players. He'd had Stan Wawrinka at match point three or four matches before Wawrinka went on to win the US Open last year. He reached the fourth round of the Australian Open. He was picking up great points, good money, and frankly, I think we were all in the tennis world and the fans around the world were enjoying watching him. So he'd sorted that. But he has always had, and I say this again without any knowledge of exactly what went on, but he's always had the Achilles heel of not necessarily being able to just concentrate on the tennis player's life, which has to be not going out, not doing anything you shouldn't do, eating boring food, having a boring life for as long as your tennis career lasts, frankly, in order to get the most out of it. One way or another, this has ended up in his system. Only he will know for sure how that happened, and and only he can suffer the consequences which are deserved. It's a real shame. He's been completely stupid. He will know that he has. I feel very sorry for some of the people around him that have believed in him and invested in him. And I do feel sorry for him that he has made such a terrible decision. He only has himself to blame, but I still, on a human level, just, you know, I don't know whether, I was thinking about this, he's 20, what is he, 27 years old, something like that?
Yeah, well, this is what I wanted to ask. Let's say the ban is 2 years, because most people seem to think that's the most likely outcome. A, what's he going to do for those 2 years? And B, will he come back stronger? Will he be a Sharapova who defiantly, you know, wants to prove everyone wrong and make sure he comes back and gives it his best possible go? Or in 2 years' time, are we going to see a sorry figure, I suppose, in Dan Evans, who's not able or willing to come back?
I suspect he won't be getting wild cards for a start, and neither should he. So you can add a good chunk more time onto that, because starting at the bottom means starting at tournaments where you just don't earn many points, even if you're winning them. That's the problem that these players have, is trying to get a leg up quickly. It's not easy to do. What is he going to do for the next 2 years? I don't know. I mean, I don't know him well enough to know exactly what he could do, but I know him a little. And, I mean, I just hope he can find something positive to put his days into so that they pass without him, yeah, frankly, having other issues, you know? That's what I hope.
Yeah, I agree. I just... he could go on a two-year-long bender, couldn't he? That's the scenario that I'm getting at, really, that lots of people have speculated. Obviously, everybody hopes that he doesn't, but he could just go, oh, you know, to hell with all of this. And I don't know, it's a terrible shame, because I so enjoyed watching him play tennis. He is an immensely frustrating character, not somebody that I've loved interviewing in recent times,
but, you know,
but
he is,
I have loved watching him play tennis.
And
that
Wawrinka
match at the new, he is like, no, I haven't not enjoyed interviewing him because he's not likable. It's just, as soon as a camera switches on, that he sort of clams up and he isn't able to project himself. Not everybody is. But I have loved watching him play tennis. That Wawrinka match in New York on the Louis Armstrong Stadium is one of my highlights of the tennis year last year, if not the highlight. It was an extraordinary match. And yeah, I'll miss that for the next 2 years. I hope I'll only have to miss it for a couple of years. I hope he will be back. But I don't know. There's a big question mark over that for me.
I want
him to prove me wrong, but there's a big question mark. Sharapova, completely different story. We've done all our talking about her ban and all the rest of it. Now we're talking about her injury. She pulled out Stanford before her second round match last week. She's now pulled out of the Rogers Cup in Toronto. Her autobiography that's coming out in a couple of weeks' time is called Unstoppable, David. She seems pretty stoppable
at
the moment.
And I think it does throw up the problem of whether bodies can withstand what top level tennis puts them through if they're going to be competitive at the top level. If you take that long out of the game, I mean, let's not forget, she'd been having terrible trouble before this whole case emerged. And our initial assumption was that she was about to announce her retirement because she was so frustrated with all the injuries she'd been having. It is possible that her body may never allow her to return to the top level, regardless of how many wild cards she receives, because if she just cannot stand physically the rigours of the tennis circuit again, that's just going to make its decision for her. I mean, that's a lot of injuries she's had now, and we still await the decision of the US Open as to whether they intend to give her a wild card, which, is still very much up in the air.
And the problem with this one is that it's a different injury to the one that kept her out of Wimbledon. This is a sore left arm, I believe, whereas it was the muscle strain that kept her out of Wimbledon. When the injuries sort of start mounting and proliferating, I think that's when you really start to fit. It's something that Tanasi Kokkinakis, who we'll come to talk about in a moment, talked about a lot at Queens, you know, it wasn't just the shoulder injury. You know, every time he thought he'd rehab the shoulder injury, something else would crop up. You know, his body just felt like it was crumbling beneath him. And there must be an element of that for Sharapova. So, yeah, we await the US Open wildcard decision. We wait to see if she's even fit to be considered for a US Open wildcard. A lot up in the air. More injuries to discuss, David, this time on the men's side. Novak Djokovic taking the rest of the year off, an announcement made. I personally think too much has been made of this. I think it's pure coincidence, but an announcement that was made on the exact same date that Federer made his announcement last year that he would be taking the remainder of 2016 off. And subsequently, Stan Wawrinka has announced the same. And actually, Wawrinka is going to be having surgery in that time, which doesn't sound brilliant to me. He's having surgery on his knee, an injury that troubled him throughout Wimbledon and the grass court season. So we're going to miss them. It is an interesting trend that's happening in tennis. Roger Federer is a great advert for taking time off and coming back stronger. The situations, obviously, with Djokovic and Wawrinka are very different, both to one another and to Federer. That we're going to have a US Open without our two finalists from last year. That, I mean, it's going to have a bizarre feel to it in that respect, I think.
Yeah, it will. It opens the door for some people, I think. And we'll get on to those runners and riders a little later on, because I personally think this is the one where Zverev is going to announce himself. But anyway, we'll get on to that in a little while.
Hang on, no, we're not onto that yet. You can't sneak that in.
Just a little teaser, what can I say? But it's quite interesting, you know, because I personally think that whilst I think Djokovic has needed time off for a while, both for this injury and both to refresh himself, and Wawrinka clearly has a very acute injury that requires surgery. Djokovic is fortunately appears not to require surgery. But I think what it probably has done, having seen what Federer did at exactly the same time last year, is whereas players might have thought, this is an injury that I can manage and I'm going to carry on managing in order to maintain my ranking and get back sooner, or where they say, right, I'm going to take 2 months off, miss the US Open and then come back for the autumn, which I think most players in the past have tended to do. A few people have thrown up and said, well, hold on, what about Nadal? He took the rest of a year off, and I think he was in 2012 after all of his injuries and came back and was dominant at the start of 13. I think this is a very specific example that has been not followed, because these guys are injured and they need time out of the game. But I do think that the fact that he did that and came back so refreshed and has been so successful did make them think, well, that is allowed then, you know, in as much as I don't need to rush back as soon as my body perhaps will allow. Let's say Djokovic needs physically 2 months off. Maybe he's just thought, do you know what, if I'm going to take 2 months off, I'll take the rest of the year off. Make sure the body is not only the acute problem is solved, but the rest of me, all the niggly injuries are gone and I've worked those out of my system, and that I'm ready for it, that I'm up for it, that I'm not just sick of it all, because it is such a treadmill, the tennis circuit. I do feel that the Federer's experience has probably had some impact in the thinking in terms of taking the whole year off. Now, I've been hammered on Twitter by all sorts of people, which is absolutely fine. That's my view.
I think it's likely. I absolutely think it's likely. We don't know. I think it's more likely in the case of Djokovic. There are more parallels there. I mean, if Stan Wawrinka are in need of surgery, that sounds a slightly different to me and slightly more worrying, really. But yeah, I'd be surprised if Federer hadn't influenced at the very least, or as you say, just made the idea, put the idea on the table, hasn't it? Whereas a year or so ago, and more, that idea wouldn't have even been on the table. You know, you're on this treadmill of the ATP World Tour, and you just stay on it. You stay on it for 11 months of the year. And then you have your 2 week holiday, your 2 weeks of off season training, and lo and behold, you're back in Australia again on the treadmill. So, yeah, he's made that an option that occurs to people now. Certainly, in terms of the US Open, I think this applies very much on the women's side as well, but it's applied on the women's side for the last couple of slams, really, with the absence of Serena. But now, look, Federer aside, Federer is the favourite for that for the US Open, for sure. But let's take Federer out of the equation. What an opportunity. I mean, this is big. Let's face it, Murray is missing Montreal this week. He's in a race against time to get the hip fit for the US Open. He's posted Instagram videos of himself doing off-court training, but in terms of on-court, it's touch and go. I get the feeling he will be there, but whether he's 100% fit to compete, I don't know. So let's take Federer and Murray out of the equation for the moment. What an opportunity. This is massive. This is when it's time now for Zverev and Kyrgios and a few others to properly step up. I don't mean reaching the fourth round. I mean reaching the finals or semi-finals, at least. This is time now. It really is time.
Well, first of all, Catherine, it feels to me like you are just ushering me towards the pole vault. So let's just step into it quickly because
you misread things, David.
Well, I can only put two and two together, and here I am. And the fact is, I ran a poll the other day about this point, because I think you've got to put Nadal in that little block and say Federer and Nadal are such clear favourites right now for the US Open.
I don't put Nadal in the same category as Federer. I'd put him ahead of Murray, but
well, surely you put him ahead of everyone else.
But I don't think that's saying that much. He's always found the US Open difficult.
He's won it twice.
Of where it is in the season, but you can't find
it difficult if you win it twice.
You know he's found it difficult because of where it is
twice.
In the season. Right? Okay. Yep. Do your pole vault, David.
Okay. So anyway, Federer and Nadal are clearly the first and second favourites. So who is the third favourite for the US Open right now? Who feels like the third favourite to you, Catherine Whittaker?
Murray. Sorry.
Well, that's what 41% of people who voted in the poll also say. And the interesting thing for me is that the three options I put were Murray, Zverev and someone else, right? And the second on that list is Zverev. So you got Murray with 41% of the vote. You got Zverev with 36% of the vote, and 23% of the vote have gone elsewhere. And the sort of people that they've been mentioning are Thiem and Cilic, and Kyrgios, if he can get injury free. I mean, the one thing I would say about Kyrgios is he pulled out midway through another match a couple of weeks ago. I think it was in Washington. And, you know, looked exactly the same as he did at Wimbledon, as though my hip's bothering me, my body's not playing ball. He was getting down emotionally and he basically just threw in the towel and walked off the court. And then in the first round in Canada, he absolutely thrashed Viktor Troicki. He was pulling out tweeners.
Awesome.
He was all over the court. And, I mean, look, that frustrates me in itself, because how can you get such a stark contrast from one week to the next? But what does strike me, and you were describing, I think, the landscape of the men's game pretty well in terms of the opportunities out there. I just wonder whether it might have clicked to him that, crikey, you know, I really do have a chance here now.
Yeah, he can win the US Open. Even with put Federer back in the mix, he can win the US Open. He's run Federer closest this year, other than the two blip results where Federer lost in Stuttgart and in Dubai. The match they played in Miami was the match of the year for me. Truly sensational. Look, Federer would be the heavy favourite in a match against him, particularly over five sets, but he can beat him. He can win the US Open, and he needs to be thinking of in those terms. Dominic Thiem needs to be thinking in those terms. He needs to not be losing to Diego Schwartzman in his opening match in Montreal. Imagine my despair. Zverev needs to be thinking in those terms. I think Zverev is thinking in those terms. He's not short of confidence. He won in Washington last week. He was awesome. The semi-final against Nishikori was the match that particularly struck me. So he won pretty easily. I think it was 3-4 against Nishikori. And there was no sort of defiance and no irritation or arrogance from Nishikori. I know he's not an arrogant bloke, but He should have, as he walked to the handshake at the end, it was just resignation, like, yep, of course I'm losing to Sasha Zverev. Whereas he should have been like, who's this upstart young kid that's beating me, Kei Nishikori, top 10 player, US Open finalist? Who does he think he is? But no, it was a resignation of like, yep, this is the natural order of things now. I lose to Sasha Zverev in straight sets on American hard courts. And brilliant news for Zverev, not so great for Nishikori. But yeah, I think Zverev needs to be thinking about winning it. I think team needs to be thinking about winning it. Kyrgios, if his body can hold out. Del Potro, again, with the caveat of the body, needs to be thinking about maybe winning it. Cilic absolutely needs to be thinking about winning it. You know, people need to not say, oh, you know, I'll have a go and see where I can get to, if I can make second week. People need to be going, I'll be disappointed if I come away without having reached the semi-final or final. It's time
I mean, in terms of Zverev, unless he is drawn into a section which features Federer or Nadal, he should be in the semi-finals. As simple as that for me.
Agreed.
Given where his game is right now, he is one of the best five players in the world. And,
agreed, yeah.
You know,
it looks like he's going to make London, doesn't it? Which is terrible news for Milan. But I think he's, what, fifth in the race to London? Possibly even fourth, actually. But it certainly looks like he's going to make it.
I think the ATP would take that, though, to be honest. You know, because he's so exciting.
He's good news for the tour, isn't he? As is, I'd just like to give a quick shout to Denis Shapovalov, who saved 5 match points last night in Montreal. What a match. I'm as you know, I'm so excited by this guy.
He's won me over, I have to say, ever since Queens. I mean, I didn't get a chance to talk about him there. I wasn't on the podcast at the time. But, I mean, not only his game, lovely lad. I mean, really, you know, we were talking in the Federer special about the curiosity Federer had. There's a bit of that in Shapovalov as well. You know, he's interested in how the tour works. He's asking questions. And, yeah, I really hope, because he gets the crowd interested. I know it's his home country that he was playing in front of last night, but he plays big men, a big guy's game in a relatively small guy's body, and that's exciting in itself.
Yeah, 6-4 in the third over Rogério Dutra Silva. Very impressive. Tanasi Kokkinakis, another I'd put in the category of not in the Kyrgios Zverev category, thinking about winning it. But boy, oh boy, was it wonderful to see him reach the final in Los Cabos last week. That is just food for the soul to see him reaching finals. Lost out to Sam Querrey, another one who, frankly, should be thinking about maybe reaching the semifinals in New York. Yeah. Why not? He did it at Wimbledon. He's won a title on the hard court. He's going to be playing at home. Why not?
Suddenly playing the best tennis of his career, Sam Querrey. And Kokkinakis, you're quite right. I was watching that video interview from an interview that you can hear on the podcast from the Queen's shows that Catherine did with Kokkinakis. And it is, every time I watch it, I find it pretty emotional, because he was so close to having to quit. And you could see in his eyes, he'd done all he could. He'd been trying for so long to make a comeback, and he really wondered whether it was ever going to happen. So fingers crossed that he just can keep playing tennis, because, you know, he's good for the game, is Kokkinakis.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He absolutely is. We've got a few minutes left and a few more subjects to touch upon. So I'm going to rattle through these with no time for pole vaults. So what have I got left? We need to talk about the women's hardcore events we've had so far. Who's looking like runners and riders for the US Open? Well, Madison Keys winning the title in Stanford. She was fantastic.
Well, this is the other thing that strikes me. You mentioned Sam Querrey. Has there ever been a better time, an opportunity for the rest of America to step up right here, both in the men's and the women's games, without Serena Williams there? People like Coco Vandeweghe, I know she lost last night against Agnieszka Radwanska, Madison Keys, players with big games who can make an impact. Cece Bellis has been playing well. There's a great opportunity for the American players at the US Open to stand up here. Jack Sock, people like that. And you mentioned no more pole vaults. Well, I'm going to quickly squeeze one in. Who will end the 2017 as world number one on the women's side? I mean, this is a great talking point. 20% say Karolina Pliskova, 36% say Simona Halep, 35% say Garbiñe Muguruza, 9% say someone else. I'm still going Garbiñe Muguruza.
Well, the number one spot is on the line over the next few weeks between Halep and Pliskova. I hope to see that tussle really play out. Halep had to retire with what looked like heat stroke in her quarterfinal against Katerina Makarova in Washington last week. Interesting caveat to that. Halep, the world number two, asked for a wild card into Stanford and was refused. So that was why she ended up playing in Washington. She was not happy about that at all. Ended up reaching the quarters in Washington, retiring from her match with Makarova, the eventual champion, with heat stroke. She really did look like she was suffering. I mean, to be fair, it was about 40 degrees in Washington. Really challenging conditions. Well done to Makarova for winning the title. I wouldn't put her in the list of contenders for the US Open, but I'm certainly very pleased to see her playing that well. I would put Madison Keys on the list. I'd put Coco Vandeweghe on the list. Muguruza, I know she lost semi-finals of Stanford, but I still think semi-finals and the performances she put in the context of, you know, her year and her total lack of consistency, for me, I think that's a good sign, and she is absolutely in contention.
I agree. Incidentally, Keys Vandeweghe, I was reading, is the first non-Williams All-American final without either Williams sister in it since Davenport Capriati in New Haven in 2003. 14 years since an All-American women's final.
Stat alert. Love a stat.
It's a good one, that, isn't it?
What else have we got? Nick Kyrgios. I should have brought this up quickly while we were talking about Nick Kyrgios. But if you haven't seen on Twitter this week, a chap got in touch with him to say, mate, I know this is a total long shot, but I'm coming to Montreal on Tuesday and it'd be great to have a hit with you if possible. And he just casually replied, Kyrgios going, sure, tap me up when you arrive. And lo and behold, they did have a hit. It was really amusing. It's all on social media. Check it out. And he then put on Twitter that anybody else that fancies a hit, just let me know. And I don't think this is a sort of calculated saccharine PR move. I genuinely think that Nick Kyrgios just wants to keep things interesting. Just doesn't
he wants some company.
He wants some company. Doesn't want his days to be boring. And he thought, yeah, why not? I mean, my brother was practically boarding a train to Montreal when I told plane to Montreal.
Got on there,
when I told him about it, yeah. So yeah, I just think that's really nice and genuine.
I have to say, it's easy
to be cynical about things like that, but that in itself is why he's good for tennis.
My initial reaction was one of, oh goodness, Nick, you know, mainly because I was thinking, well, where's his mind then? You know, because I saw him in Miami and Indian Wells, so engaged, so dialed in and playing such amazing tennis. I don't want him just straying and drifting along again. But look, he doesn't work to the same laws as the rest of tennis, it seems to me. So, you know, he's experimenting at every stage with his life, with his career. We'll see where he ends up.
Yes, indeed. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, David, and 3 topics still to cover. The Davis Cup and the ITF, they've been having their AGM, their annual general meeting in Vietnam this week. And the hot topic that they've been discussing and voting on is the reform of the Davis Cup to become best of 3 sets to best of 5. Now, the member states have a vote in this, and they voted not to reform it to best of 3 sets. So what did the ITF board do? They passed a motion that now allows them to ignore the member states and make their own rules about things, which sounds very much like a sort of Vladimir Putin-esque move to, if you don't like the rules, then just change the rules. And it sounds like they're paving the way to reform the Davis Cup to be best of 3 to best of 5 sets, which is a very contentious move.
What I should say, though, is 63%, I think it was, of those member states actually voted in favour of best of 3, and they needed 66% to get it over the line, which, yeah, I mean, it didn't pass, but I think it's probably unfair to say they didn't vote in favour of it. More of them did, but not enough to pass the rule. It still was an extraordinary day when we got the second email from the ITF saying, we've got a new vote now, and that that vote is to change the rules. And that one has been passed, everybody. So next time we put this up for vote, effectively, we'll be able to get it through, is what it sounded like. But yeah, there's clearly a depth of feeling that they want to get this through. And David Haggerty was very strong in his quotes that, you know, this thing needs to reform. That's his view. The Davis Cup needs to change if it's to stay relevant. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction on both sides out there. There's going to be people who hate the idea of it going best of 5. I know Todd Woodbridge is amongst them. Paul McNamee, one or two others, have already said that. But, you know, I love best of 5, but I can see in the Davis Cup why they are wanting to do this.
A couple more bits of business to mop up. Amazon have won the rights in the UK to ATP Masters 1500 tennis coverage. They have outbid Sky. So from 2018,
well, that's what we're hearing. Not confirmed yet.
Is it not fully confirmed yet?
Ooh, not announced, okay. And confirmed, but it certainly has been reported.
The Guardian
as that
is certainly
is
reporting it. The Guardian certainly were reporting it as a done deal. But so we await confirmation. But in principle, David, your thoughts?
Well, I suspect it will be done. I think that they are probably working out the finer details. But you know that they haven't announced it yet. It has sounded as though it's been coming in terms of Sky losing those rights for some time. I mean, 25 years they've held them. I think they've done a really good job. But their interest levels in the sport have diminished. They lost the US Open rights to Eurosport. They have rebranded all their channels, and they haven't had a tennis channel as part of that. So it has sounded for a while as though this is coming. And I think the surprise is that Amazon have stepped in and chosen tennis as one of their first sports to invest in, if this is indeed what ends up happening. And it does appear that the landscape is going to offer a number of these sort of deals in the future with sports, whether it's other streaming services that decide to invest in sport. But how it will look, and if and when it does get passed, well, we'll have to wait and see, because this is new ground. This is a completely new way of broadcasting tennis.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think it's quite forward thinking of the ATP, really, because frankly, this is the way the world is going. Tennis TV channels, as we know them now, TV as we know it now, will cease to exist in a few years. Everything will be purely online. Everything will be Amazon Prime and Netflix and BBC iPlayer. So to take the sort of advanced move to go entirely online, I know, of course, through Fire Stick and all the rest of it, I don't mean you can't physically watch it on a TV. I mean the platform itself is online based. I think it's really forward looking, and I'm quite impressed. One other final bit of business, and I'm really sorry to say it's a sad bit of business, but we must touch upon it, because the tennis world has lost, it's actually lost a couple of people recently, but I know, David, you wanted to mention Jérôme Golmar, the French player, who died earlier this week, aged just 43, So he was suffering from ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, in the States. And we lost Brad Druitt to this disease. Peter Doohan, also, David, the conqueror of Boris Becker in Wimbledon back in the day, the Australian player, he has also died in recent days. He had been suffering with ALS as well. It seems sad and bizarre that ALS seems to strike so many former tennis players.
Yeah, motor neurone disease, as many British listeners will know it has. I mean, as you say, Jerome Golmar, terribly sad. I mean, he just 43 years of age. He was once 22 in the world. My personal memory of him, I mean, aside from the fact that I worked with him when I was at the ATP, he would have been a young mid-20s tennis player at the time. I remember before I got working in tennis, probably three or four months before I started, I remember waking up early one morning in the UK and listening to him beat Tim Henman 11-9 in the fifth set of the Australian Open in 1998. And he was a great player to watch. Left-hander, just a swashbuckling player. He made you feel good to watch tennis, frankly, when he was on the court. And it's just such sad news. Really sad.
Really sad news. Well said, David. I'm sorry to leave you listeners on such a sad note, but I really think it needed to be touched upon. I hope you've enjoyed our first tennis podcast in a couple of weeks. I hope you've enjoyed the dulcet tones of David Law, fresh from holiday. And we'll be back next week as things start to hot up ahead of the US Open. We'll be back with weekly podcasts. And then, of course, from the US Open, we'll be bringing you daily Grand Slam podcasts. And that is because if your Kickstarter backing. We've said it at various times throughout the year, but I don't think we can say it enough. Thank you so much to everyone that supported us at the beginning of the year with our Kickstarter campaign. It is because of that campaign that we're able to bring you the daily podcast, that we're able to do more. We're doing lots more. We have merch now. We're going to have a website soon. We're doing all sorts of things that we weren't able to do before. So thank you very much. We'll be back next week as the pre-US Open tennis season gets into full gear. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.